Andrew Feinstein is the owner of several Denver businesses, including Trax, Denver's most popular and longest-lasting gay nightclub. He is a perfect example of the many business owners trying to survive under the new political realities created by Colorado's progressives. I'm John Caldera. This is the audio version of our TV show, Devil's Advocate. You can watch that program by going to our YouTube channel, IITV. That stands for Independence Institute TV. Please subscribe and share this podcast. Enjoy. It's been a real joy to get to know Andrew Feinstein. He owns Trax, the world-famous gay nightclub. Also, Real Works Denver. Andrew, when did you know you were gay?
I can code switch a lot in my life, but that's not one that I can code switch to. I hate to disappoint you, John, but I am heterosexual with a beautiful wife and two beautiful children.
Well, then we can just end this right now.
I know.
I always thought Trax has been around
45 years. 45 years next year.
Yeah, I remember people in high school going, and it was the thing. It is still the thing. It is. Other gay nightclubs and restaurants and bars have come and gone. Trax stays. Why?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. It's fun to do this with you. I've been a fan of yours for a long time, going back multiple publications ago. So it's great to be here, and I really appreciate it. And I love talking about Trax. I think Trax, the ethos of Trax, which I think yourself and your colleagues here at the Institute would appreciate, it's all about just be yourself. You know, we've never said you have to be this, that, or the other. You know, a lot of gay bars within the gay bar genre, especially back in the day, were segregated. You know, there were gay white bars, or there were gay women's bars, or there were gay African-American bars. We always said we are a gay bar for everybody and everybody who wants to celebrate and embrace the lifestyle of our customers and our staff. And I think that's probably why we've endured for so long, because we're there for everybody. We've never been for a narrow audience.
I've known of some gay bars that have gone under. One, because of how bad the city's getting, and I want to get to that, but also just because, tell me if I got this right, there was a time gays needed a place to go, meet each other, be safe, and do this, and now it's just not nearly as important. And I mean this in all the best ways. You don't need a gay bar anymore if you're gay. You don't need a place that you quietly go and see and meet your friends, right?
100%. I mean, think about this. So when Trax opened its doors in 1980, it was open 5 nights a week. And imagine being someone of the LGBTQ community in 1980, right? Yeah. You probably couldn't be yourself during the day. You probably couldn't go out on a date with somebody that you loved out in public. So you came to Trax. And there weren't a lot of choices back then. So our customers came to Trax 5 nights a week, literally 5 nights a week. And the same customer would come 3 to 4 times in that week. Well, that whole dynamic has changed. And the reason we've now added Real Works Denver to our repertoire of event offerings, if you will, is because there isn't a market demand anymore, nor should there be. Because societally, things have gotten much better for all of us. We've become a much more inclusive society, which is a good thing. Now, that being said, on Saturday nights, we are still the go-to place for members of the LGBTQ community, but we are, of course, accepting and embracing of all walks of life.
But the next time but not those straights. You don't let the straights
well, no,
in,
but we love everyone. And by the way, the next time you come with me on a Saturday night at 11 o'clock, you'll see we have a really eclectic audience. It's not like a typecast gay white male audience by any means. We have a very eclectic audience, but it is still an homage to the gay audience on Saturday nights. We also still host, outside of Las Vegas, we host the country's largest monthly drag show every fourth Friday called Drag Nation. But the rest of our programming is all over the place. And we do a lot of stuff in Real Works. We host events of all types. One of my favorite nights.
Well, by the way, those who don't know, Real Works is an incredible events space.
Thank you.
It has a lot of personality. Yeah. We've done things there. It's remarkably versatile for the size space. And it's kind of an odd size space. It's not too big. It's not too small. But you can do pretty much anything there.
And we literally host everything. And one of my favorite stories is we had a fundraiser for St. Anthony's Hospital one night. So we literally had nuns and priests in Real Works. And in Trax that night, we had what's called a bear night. Bears are the big, burly.
Yeah, I've been told if I were gay, I was supposed to be a bear. Yes, I hate that.
I thought I saw you there that night. But anyway, we had the bears in Trax, and we had the nuns and the priests in RealWorks, and you can just imagine them passing each other in the parking lot outside, coming and going from the night. I'm sure the bear stayed up later than the nuns
back,
and the priests.
Back when I had a real job, I used to do stage lighting. And the same promoter did a lesbian show. Again, this was the 90s, and I forget the... It was some witch or something like that. And it was all lesbian crowd. And by the way, it's so comfortable being the one guy in 1,000 lesbians. At least you know why you're not going to get laid. You know, all right, fine. But she double booked it. And it was Edgar Winter afterwards. For those who don't know, hardcore, redneck, rocker, albino, which is great to light because he could just... And so you had this politically active lesbian crowd coming in and all these bikers going out. And it was just, you know, they were like, are they in the right place? It's not like that anymore. It's very different.
So like to use a Colorado phrase, I've always considered ourselves to be a pioneering business in a lot of respects. I mean, imagine opening, and again, I wish I could take credit for it. It was my father and his business partner at the time who later became my business partner who opened the doors of Trax in 1980. With a giant pink neon sign that said Trax for anyone to see in every which direction from downtown Denver. Because back then, gay bars and clubs were underground. They were underground. They were not broadcasted. They were not advertised. They said, screw this. We are going to be loud and proud.
Talk to me about this because yeah. I find this fascinating. I chide you for not being gay. Your father started the business with his partner. So obviously he was gay. But he's no. not.
Yeah.
So yeah. Tell me about these two guys who opened up Trax nearly 50 years ago. Who were they?
So my father, Neil Feinstein, who's still alive, he'll be 85 in a week. So happy birthday, Dad. He'll be 85.
Does he know you're straight and how will you break it to him?
Yeah. he knows. He definitely knows. And his business partner at the time, Marty Chernoff, who I love dearly, who's passed 5 years ago in May. And so his passing is actually coming up. The anniversary of his passing is coming up. And Marty.
Well, you never want to say to a guy, your passing is coming
sorry,
up.
So Marty and my father, I would argue they were incredibly visionary. But as far as, it's a long story how they even got into the gay bar business to begin with. Really, Marty did first. The short version of a very long story is he owned a biker bar downtown called the Foxhole. And he was running gambling junkets to Vegas and he was a card player. And he was doing so well with his gambling that he leased the bar to somebody else. He owned the business, the real estate, but he leased the business to somebody else. And he went and checked on it one night, and it was a lawyer who had leased the bar from him. He's like, why would a lawyer rent a bar? But whatever, as long as he pays the rent, I don't care. And he went and checked on it one night, and it was pitch black inside, and it was all men. And Marty realized, this is in 1975, he realized, oh my gosh, there's a market here. There's an underserved market here. So, you know, I think it's part of just, you know, straight up entrepreneurism, opportunism, you know, having a vision for what's coming, where the world is going. And Marty said to himself, when this lawyer screws this up, when he doesn't pay his rent, I'm taking it over. And even though the place was packed every night, the guy was missing rent payments because he was part of the party, not part of the profit. And so sure enough,
to explain that one, as every bar owner knows.
Yeah, so I was taught by Marty and my father, when I got into this business with them years ago, you can be part of the party or you can be part of the profit. You cannot be part of both, which is why I won't
be.
You don't get drunk in your own bar, period.
Right. Otherwise, it turns into Studio 54.
You got it. You got it. And so Marty owned this ramshackle gay bar called the Foxhole. He quit the gambling thing. He focused 100% on the bar, did very well. It did so well that they couldn't physically hold the amount of customers that wanted to be there. So there was a warehouse across the street, and he and my father bought the warehouse together in 1980, and it became Trax. And this is the Studio 54 era. So rather than hiding from who they were, they celebrated it with the big neon pink sign.
And that was, just going back to that, because I was in high school then, and I remember the march to gay marriage. Yeah. And that was a particularly... interesting time because inside the gay community was this fight, do we out people against their will? And the idea was, no, we're moving towards acceptance. We got to do this. And when they find out Rock Hudson is gay, it's going to blow their minds. When they find out that their cousin, Bob, is gay, but Bob seems like such a nice guy. And so there was this big fight, but don't out me. You're going to ruin my life. No, we got to out you because everybody likes you. And so it was not... It was a moving time, But inside the movement, there was definitely this turmoil of strategy and tactics. So father's not gay. Marty's not gay. Both Jewish?
Jewish, Goldwater Republican, Libertarian. They'd be good members of the Independent Institute.
Well,
yes.
Your father's still alive. He could give. Now.
Well, I've just given on behalf of all of us.
But, I appreciate
that.
No, but isn't that amazing? To me, it's amazing. You've got Jewish, Republican, Goldwater Republicans at a time when, let's say, the Rockefeller Republicans would not be opening a gay bar.
Correct.
Proudly.
So you know, as a Jewish person, and I'm not religious, and I don't want to get into anything that has to do with religion, especially
on
your show.
Why did you kill Jesus?
Yeah. But killing Jesus aside, you know, if you take elements of the Old Testament literally, you know, we were enslaved as a people in Egypt. We were slaves in Egypt. We were strangers in another person's land. And so you're taught as a Jewish person very early on to embrace somebody else who may be a stranger in your land. And I think that's why there's just an inherent—
That's fascinating. I never thought about that.
There's kind of in our DNA, there's kind of an inherent social justice instinct. And I think that drove Marty and my father to embrace the gay community.
But that instinct wasn't, oh, we embrace him, here's a bunch of money. Your father was, oh, we embrace the outsider, let's build something for them.
Yeah, sure.
That helps and we'll make some money.
But John, it's no different than the Jews who started Hollywood, or the Jews who started the comic book industry, or the Jews who started, you know, the NBA. You know, all these urban businesses and all these businesses that celebrated the other and the outsiders and the immigrants, a lot of those business stories are a Jewish story in many ways. And I just think that they were an extension of that.
You mentioned comic books.
Yeah.
Was DC started?
Bob Kane,
yeah,
the creator of Batman,
yeah,
was Robert Cohen. Stan Lee, who created Spider-Man, was Stan Lieber. And Superman was created by Schuster and Siegel,
right?
Two Jewish boys from Ohio. So the comic book industry, and the publishers were Jewish, and you know, a lot of the initial artists and the writers were Jewish, because the Jews of that era in the comic book industry, and specifically, you know, you're talking about Jews from the 1940s and 1950s. Well, their parents were immigrants, so those guys were all, you know, I don't call it first or second generation, whichever generation comes first, but they were all first or second generation Americans whose parents lived an immigrant experience. And in that era, to your point about Rockefeller Republicans or maybe WASPy Republicans, I don't know how out you could be about being Jewish in
That's
the 30s
true.
And
Back
the 40s.
Then,
So Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, X-Men are a very much a Jewish expression of an immigrant who had to hide his or her real self. And that was their way of getting... So I think there's... So again...
I never really thought of it that way. I've always seen those things through the adolescent eyes, which I've never grown out of, you know, we're outsiders, we're not accepted, everybody hates us. That's why Spider-Man's so great and the X-Men are so great, is they hate us, but we're just normal people. That's a fascinating way.
So Batman turns 85, I think, this week, okay? So Batman is the same age as my father, 85. That means he was born in 1939. Well, think about what it was like being Jewish in the 1930s, with the rise of anti-Semitism. Right, leading up to World War II, Hitler's slaughtering Jews left and right. There were a lot of anti-Semitic sympathizers in this country, including Henry Ford. And Batman is an outgrowth of that. And in a sense, he's a rebellion against that, the fact that he had to hide his true self.
Which brings me to this question, because I know Batman's one of your favorite. So he and Robin, do they have something going on or not?
It's definitely, I think it's just one guy didn't have, two guys who didn't have fathers. I don't think it's a Bert and Ernie situation. But I don't know. Bert and Ernie, a lot more suspect. They live and bathe together. So, you know, and never have girlfriends. At least Batman and Robin have girlfriends.
Yeah. I'm thinking about those two.
And don't bathe together.
I'm thinking about those two old Muppets that are up in the
balcony.
They're
my favorite.
Yeah,
they're my favorite.
You got to wonder about those guys.
Yeah, when I was growing, Statler and Waldorf.
Named after what?
I don't know, actually.
The hotels in New York
City.
The
Waldorf Astoria.
And Statler.
And the Statler. When I was getting back involved in our family business and taking over tracks, and I had Marty really recruited me to come back and do this. I always felt like my father and Marty were Statler and Waldorf watching me from the balcony and barking at me and telling me what to do, what not to do. But hey, look, I'm very blessed.
Ernie and Bert, where do those come from?
I don't know. Do you know?
It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, really?
Ernie the Cabbie and, no, Bert the Cabbie, Ernie the Cop.
Mm.
That's where Henson's.
Did they bathe together too?
They probably did. It was all innuendo back there. All right, getting back to Trax. You take over at Trax. It's still doing well. The industry has changed, but the business is still there. You've added this other stuff. I want to talk about the business side of this. Restaurants don't survive. Bars don't survive. Anything that's been around for 45 years is an anomaly. Hell, even Casa Bonita needed to get bailed out. So if you boil it down, Trax works in today's weird world because?
Well, so Trax is a standalone business, is a profitable business. Now, I'm very fortunate that we also own the real estate. So I'll get to that in a moment because it does help. You know, when things happen like HIV or COVID and your government overlords shut you down, you know, it helps when you don't have to make your rent payment because you own the building. So that's given us a lot of staying power. I will admit, it gives us a lot of staying power.
You mean you own it and it's paid off.
And it's paid off. And there are businesses on the block that pay rent that we have nothing to do with. So we have diversified income as a company, if you will. But Trax as a standalone business makes money. It's a profitable business. But if we didn't have the benefit of owning that building, COVID would have taken us down. AIDS would have taken us down. We wouldn't be here today. I wouldn't be here today talking about Trax. It would have taken us down. And related to that, you know, as a business, I think that you have to have diversification in your programming. We have a gay women's night. We have a drag show. We have a roller skating night. We have different DJs that we bring in. We have an 18 plus night. And then on the event side, we do everything from the nuns at St. Anthony's to Kamala Harris was in our building 2 weeks ago for a fundraiser.
And you didn't stop her?
I didn't stop her. We host everyone. Everyone's welcome. And so, hey, look, we've done stuff with Corey Gardner before. So we've
done stuff with us.
Yeah, we've done stuff with you guys, and we're happy to do that. So, you know, we are a business. We're open to doing business with all walks of life. I won't let you in if you're a Klansman, but we are open to a lot of different types of business.
You're a bigot.
You count me in as a bigot if anti-Klansman counts.
So let me ask you about the last decade. This state has changed. The city has changed. Businesses are hurt. What has been the most difficult thing in the last decade keeping your business running? I'm talking from a policy side or a political outcome. Let me start with the homeless. Has that been a problem for you?
Okay, so where do we even start with this question? All the above have been a problem. Okay, so homelessness and crime, you know, we've seen all types of vagrancy, thievery, guys ripping, you know, copper wires out of our, you know, equipment in the alley. Our trucks,
really,
the catalytic converters in our trucks have been stolen a couple of times. You know, just the petty crime stuff. We've had the issues with people doing naughty stuff in the alleys like you've had here at the Independent.
Yeah, but those are my employees. It's a different thing.
And it may be our employees too. Look, it's a double-edged sword. So let's actually start with the positive and then we'll get to the negative.
Yeah.
Okay. Cause I don't want to just whine and complain about it. So the last 10 years has been very good to us as a business overall. Macro, it's been very good. I'm a big growth guy, so the more the merrier. The more people that want to come to Denver, the more customers we get. There's apartments being built on all sides of us. We have some.
And that's all great for you because they got dry tongues and you got a bar.
Yeah, and full disclosure, we're involved in some of those real estate projects. So we're thrilled to see a new downtown emerging around Trax and RealWorks. I mean, when I jumped back into the business almost 20 years ago, I couldn't beg somebody to come and host an event. You know, I couldn't beg. We had to give the room away just to get people to come to that icky part of Denver, you know?
Where is it for people?
So we're between 35th and 36th, between Walnut and Larimer Street. So if you're at Larimer Square, at 15th and Larimer, 20 blocks north, northeast.
20 long blocks.
You get to
Trax. These are all warehouses. I mean, when your old man put it together, this is not a great area of town.
We're 10 blocks from Coors Field. We're 20 blocks from Larimer Square. But before we've seen this recent spate of cleanups, pretty spooky. I mean, to walk from Larimer and 15th to Trax, I mean, not that many people do that walk, but that's a tough walk. I mean, you're dealing with all of the, you know, the homeless centers and all of the rehabilitation centers, all that's in between us. And it's really like a barrier between our part of downtown and what you would consider traditional downtown. But anyway, so it's ensconced what we call the River North Art District, the Rhino Art District. I've been the I was the chairperson of the art district for a long time. I stepped down 2 years ago. So there's a lot going on. So that's the positive. The positive is more customers, more diverse customers, more different types of events. We've had everybody walk through our doors. I mean, just everybody's walked through our doors, whether it's Michelle Obama, Bill Clinton, Kamala Harris, Cory Gardner, our, you know, Lauren Boebert's been in our building. You know, we've had.
Yeah, but she was probably just on a date.
Yeah, we've just had, we get everybody comes through our doors, which is great. I feel like we're the living room of Denver and to some extent the living room of Colorado. We hosted Jared Polis. You're wearing a purple shirt, I've noticed. We're wearing, we hosted Jared Polis's purple party, which was like his fun inauguration ball after he won the first time. You know, signifying that it's the first time an openly gay person has ever been, you know, elected governor in the United States. It's pretty awesome.
What's awesome is nobody gives a damn.
Well, by the way.
That is the best part of having a gay governor. Nobody cares.
And to my point, at that purple party, you wouldn't believe how many of my Republican friends were there who don't care.
Yeah.
All they cared about was Jared, which was great. Oh, we'll see if they care. So,
yeah.
But anyway, okay, so let's talk about the regulatory environment. I don't want to be dramatic and say we're under assault, but there's a couple things that are killing us. Obviously, crime, homelessness. We've had to up, you know, our insurance costs have gone up. Our security costs have gone up. You know, we do have full-time off-duty police officers. We had to buy metal detectors just because of general crime has gone up.
So when you go to the bar, people go through a metal detector
yes,
to get in?
Yes, of course. Well, don't you go through one at Pepsi, at Ball Arena and Mile High Stadium and Coors Field? What's the difference? I mean, we are gathering thousands of people. We move 10,000 people a week through our doors. So you have to have a higher level of security. Minimum wage is a killer.
Talk specifically about minimum wage. It is now $18.29, less if you're on wait staff.
Not much less.
Yeah. Come on. It's a minimum wage. That's not that much money. Why do you, rich business owner, care about exploiting the little man?
Well, I don't exploit anybody. You just can't have it both ways. I mean, if we're being asked to pay a minimum wage of $18 an hour.
By the way, you're not asked.
Or forced. Then you can't complain when your beer is $14.
Right.
You know, you have to come up with some sort of a profit somewhere, unless you think that.
How much is labor cost in a business like Trax?
It's about a third.
All right.
It's about a third. I mean, you want to keep it to 20%, but it ends up being about a third. And then you have occupancy costs. And occupancy costs are a huge killer. You know, utilities have gone up precipitously. But the biggest, the number one killer.
You mean green energy is costing you a lot more money?
Green energy it's ridiculous. But we're going to have to spend to make sure that the power plants can give us the green energy
But when it was started, it was going to be a penny a month more. That was it.
Yeah.
No, it's putting businesses under.
They're lying to you. We'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
But the number one killer, and I talked to you about this after your column a couple of weeks ago.
Where I got it wrong because I did not mention.
The number one killer, the meteor that's coming to kill the dinosaurs, okay, is property taxes. Traxes, just Trax, okay, the cute gay club that everybody likes to come and party at. Our property taxes in 2022 were $176,000 a year, which is a big number. Now, $174,000, something like that. Now, they're $376,000 a year. They went up by $200,000, okay? Think about that. So Trax
in 115%?
Yes. So Trax in 2023, we had our highest gross revenue ever. We moved more people through our building than ever.
We sold more drinks than ever.
Our net profit was down from 2022 because of
all these things.
Okay. Now, why would Trax's property taxes be so high? Why? It's because the assessors in the state of Colorado assess property based on what they call highest and best use. And because our block happens to be zoned for a 16-story high rise, which is not a bad thing, okay? They tax you as if you are a 16-story high-rise. But they don't factor in, and what if you have long-term leases? What if you don't want to be a 16-story high-rise? They're basically forcing you to destroy, remember the meteor coming to kill the dinosaurs. They're forcing you to decimate your business and redevelop your property, whether you want to or not, and whether the market's ready for you to do that or not.
So
and it's the number one killer of small businesses.
Let me stop there for a second. So, I'm trying to remember the jazz club that's
El Chapultepec.
El Chapultepec. I think I got that close. And people are crying because it's gone. Well, Trax could be on a similar trajectory because you have to pay so much in tax that in order to make that bit of property worth it, you might have to knock it down and put up an apartment building.
Correct. Correct.
Holy hell. So this thing that your old man started nearly 50 years ago, this pretty sizable piece of Colorado history, needs to be wiped out and gone forever because of the tax man.
Or I just run it like the Independence Institute as a nonprofit.
You couldn't handle our losses.
You know what I mean? I mean, yeah. it's a Faustian bargain. That's what we're dealing with here. And it's what they've done with taxes. I tried to do just a little bit of homework before we talked today, but, you know, property taxes have, I believe they've tripled over the last decade for commercial property. And I know you weren't a fan of unwinding Gallagher, but this is why we did it. I mean, commercial property was so disproportionately punished relative to residential property.
I agree. And, but what you did by getting rid of Gallagher was instead of bringing your tax burden down, you just screwed everybody else. And we warned you. We warned you. We said, don't do it this way. Yes, it is unfair. So let's do something to cap business property, commercial property. But no, you smart guys had to go and screw it all for us. You feel better about yourself now?
Hey, I just got my home property tax bill is, most of my friends, this is anecdotal, but most of my friends, their property, home property tax bills have gone up between 25 and 35%. Our commercial property, the commercial property taxes in our commercial property portfolio have gone up about 30%. So no one should be.
If you had to do it over again, would you have supported repealing Tabor? I mean, Gallagher?
We probably could have done it a different way. I'll give you that.
Oh, what a cop out. You're a politician already.
I'm a politician at heart. Hey, when you deal with the stuff we have to deal with, it's very political. But this property tax thing is a big problem. And take Trax's the story and multiply it by a magnitude of every coffee shop and every brewery and every retail.
And every homegrown business Trax.
Right.
Trax is not a franchise. It's not McDonald's.
Right. If you're Starbucks and you're paying your CEO $50 million a year, why do you care what property taxes are in Denver, Colorado?
Right.
But you're right. There is only one Trax. And we've taken it. We've taken it from the COVID shutdowns, which were outrageously stupid. We've taken it with minimum wage, utilities, insurance, and now this property tax thing. And look, we're going to hang in there, but we're not going to be there forever. We can't. We can't afford to be there forever. And we're going to have to find another warehouse in another warehouse district somewhere else and replicate our magic somewhere else.
I want you to say this again, because as things are going politically in the state and the city, this Trax, this bit of Colorado history, it cannot last.
Not forever. We're not going anywhere anytime. By the way, for those watching, we're not going anywhere anytime soon. There's nothing to worry about. But a day will come and we'll have to move it. We'll have to find a new location.
And by the way, it's all because of public policy, not because of customer demand.
Correct.
Well, this is the point I want to make.
Yeah.
It's not like you haven't stopped serving a clientele that loves your place and gives you business. If just left on the market, you're thriving. You're thriving more than you ever have. You just told me that your gross receipts are up. But it's the political stuff, the crime, the homelessness, the taxes, the minimum wage, probably the Family Leave Act. All these things are conspiring.
Oh, yeah. All the above.
You can't do it.
I should probably just quick acknowledgement to our team at Trax, because I don't deserve any credit. They deserve all the credit. They do such a great job of getting our audience numbers up, especially post-COVID. I mean, people didn't want to go out again. You know, our government overlords scared us so much about going out and mingling in crowds, right? Like our team has done a phenomenal job of getting those customers back. We had to work so hard. Think about where Denver was. Think about where Rhino was, like in the mid-00s, late-00s.
Yeah.
We had to beg people to come to 35th and Walnut. Beg them, okay? Free nights, free admission.
It was not a part of town you were going to walk
it. We finally got that place cranking. And then they whacked us with COVID and overreacted with COVID. And now we've had to get our customers back in the doors. And we finally get everyone back in the doors and they get us with all these things, right? Insurance, labor, property taxes, utilities. And at least you get something for your money. You know, you don't have any crime. You don't have any filth. You don't have anything to worry about. I'm being sarcastic. So, it's a problem. But I don't want to sound like a giant whiner. I mean, Denver's been very good to us.
But,
it's been a good run.
But the fact of the matter is policy is hurting your business.
Correct.
Policy is going to mean the people you work for you, there won't be as many if it keeps going this way. If you were to have an audience with the city council, let's start there. city, not state, and they would listen to what you said. What is it you would want them to do?
Oh gosh, from a city council standpoint?
City mayor.
No, I get it. So look, I've got a great relationship with most city council people. I have a really good relationship with our new mayor. I had a great relationship with our old mayor. I actually hosted all three of his election night parties. So we went 3 for 3 with
him. I mean, the guy who shut you down and told you not to fly on a plane, but then flew on a plane himself.
I'm not going to comment on that because he's a good friend. But the irony of it was he shut us down, and then both he and Polis shut us down, and I was asked to be on the committee to figure out how to keep our doors open. I like that. I said, I have a great idea for you guys. How about just let us get open? But they're good friends, and I'm proud to call them good friends, and they will always be good friends. And
that's
and
a suck up, by
hold,
the
no,
way.
No, hold on, hold on. And you can be
they're,
friends
they're
with
killing
people.
Killing you.
You can be
they're
friends with people and not always agree with them. But to answer your question about what would I do with city council? Well, first things first, I actually have to go back to the state. The first thing the state owes me, they owe me, and they owe every single bar, club, and restaurant in the state of Colorado, and Polis is for this, is extend our hours. That's the first thing they should do. They should allow us to be open all night, 24 hours. Because we have this stupid law, we have to close at 2 o'clock. Because if there's a drop of alcohol present at 2 o'clock, you lose your liquor license. Okay, so what do? At 1:45 a.m., you know, just about when you're getting started, John, the lights come on.
Oh, I know. I've worked enough of those.
And we shove everybody out in the street at the exact same time, where they eat each other and kill each other and beat each other up, and who the hell knows what they do to each other.
The old line, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
You can't stay here. Yeah. So number one, I need the state to change that. We need the state to change that law, and then city council needs to vote for Denver to opt into it. So that would be one thing I would ask of the state and city council. I think as a general statement with city council and the state of Colorado, stay out of our business. Just stay out of it.
So your good friend, Jared Polis, who gave permission for the city to jack up your minimum wage, and Jared Polis, who shut down all the businesses, Jared Polis, who went out to Loveland with his Department of Revenue guys to threaten to take liquor licenses for people who were staying open when he said they should be shut. These things have real consequences. And the things that people love in Colorado, like El Chapultepec.
So close. He used to call it the Peck. Think about it that way.
All right. Yeah. And tracks. They're on the way out if this keeps up.
We're on the endangered species list, like the wolves before they reintroduced them. Here's the thing. I think it's easy to rant and rave. This is something I think about a lot. You know, I think a lot of these are well-intentioned policies, right? Like, who doesn't want affordable housing? Who doesn't want clean energy? Who doesn't want safer streets?
Unicorns and rainbows?
Who doesn't want, you know, I understand the argument that just because someone's made some bad choices with their drug use, they shouldn't be put in jail for the rest of their life. I get a lot of those arguments, and they are all in their own respective silos. How's this for political?
What are you running for, man?
We'll talk about that later. They're well-intentioned, but here's the problem. Everything the city and the state have done to incentivize affordable housing has made it less affordable for the average person. You know, we own apartments 2 blocks away from tracks. We own an apartment block. And I'm not a martyr, but we lease about 30% of our units to our own employees so they can walk to work. Because an employee who can walk to work is an awesome employee. Not only is it good for them because they're not in their car for 2 hours a day, now they have extra time to do whatever the hell they want to do. Get an extra degree, work a second job. And by the way, as a business person, if someone flakes on a shift, it's nice to have an employee 2 blocks away
who can walk
run over and help out.
Right.
Okay? So I'm all about people walking. I'm all about the live, work, play environment of a city. But the problem is that with all these things they're throwing at us, with eviction laws and increased taxes and increased regulations, who do you think we pass that expense on to?
Exactly.
The very person that we want to be living affordably in our city.
This is what I find so remarkable about progressive policies, is that they claim that they're doing this to help poor people, mostly minorities. Who do they end up hurting most?
Of course, poor people,
mostly minorities.
So to me, there's always a middle ground. So one thing I've argued for, and we did this in Rhino, you know, come up with, just incentivize it, don't penalize it, okay? So back to our 16-story high rise, okay? Why is my block zoned for 16 stories? There's a train station 2 blocks away. There are 40-story towers 8 blocks away. Why is it 16? Why not just make it unlimited and mandate that 10% of all the units that we build go to, you know, take 30% off the rent? Make it an incentive. Don't make it a penalty.
Because it's still messing with the marketplace, and
you
shouldn't have to do it.
It is, but to a lesser extent. But you got to
lesser evil is still
evil. You got to come up with an incentive. And also, why not just juice up the supply of units? That's why things are so unaffordable. Let capitalists like ourselves do what we do. Be greedy, build too much, and it'll get affordable for everybody real fast.
Exactly.
You know,
you want to take care of affordability? Get rid of urban growth boundaries.
I agree.
Colorado is 98% vacant of all developable land.
Yeah.
There's no reason that people should pay more than 70 grand for a house here. It's obscene, and it hurts poor people.
But also, it hurts business. It's not good for business when your employees have to commute 2 hours a day to come work for you, okay? It's not good for the business environment if companies say to themselves, why am I leaving California to come to California? Right. Like, if I'm going to bring 300 or 400 jobs, I've heard, by the way, so my friends at the Metro Chamber,
beautiful.
My friends at the Metro Chamber who recruit companies, they hear this. They hear this. Why am I leaving California to come to California, okay? Like, if I'm bringing
when I could go to Texas and not pay
tax. But you got to think about your employees. If I'm bringing 300 to 400 employees, you know, how are the schools? How's the affordability? How are the parks? Are
there
going to be needles in the ground on the parks when I get there?
You had an interesting idea when we were talking before about the migrants coming in. Mm. That Denver has more migrants per capita than any city. On top of our horrendous homeless problem, which is just a crime problem, the more you incentivize being homeless, the more services you give the homeless, what a shock, you get more homeless. cities that actually arrest them, like Colorado Springs, doesn't have that problem. It's madness. I can't figure it out myself. You had an idea for migrants. What should we do?
For migrants, it's not politically correct. So let me just take
I'll say it. Andrew Feinstein wants to kill them all. I thought that was politically incorrect.
So maybe just a quick comment on migrants. I think it takes a lot of courage to leave anywhere in the world, but to leave Venezuela, to physically leave Venezuela and work your way up through Central America, through Texas to get here, takes a lot of courage. And I'm very pro-migrant. I mean, we all came from
immigrants. That doesn't mean we open it up and let it in.
On a federal level, I'm going to probably drive a lot of your viewers crazy. I wouldn't build a wall. I'd build a freeway. And I would scan everybody's eyeballs. I'd get everybody's fingerprints. I would document who they are, where they came from. And then I would do, I don't know if you call it means testing or merit-based immigration, whatever you want to call it. And you send folks to where we need them in this country. So if you want to come in, that's fine. But you don't get to choose where you go. And so, for example, Iowa, okay? I'm just making this up. But for all we know, Iowa has a huge dearth of people that are willing to work in farms in Iowa. Maybe Detroit has a huge dearth of people that are willing to work in hospitals. You know, I know that from like a
The unions are going to love you, by the way.
Well, I'm no friend of the unions. I know that back to Iowa, for example, Iowa has a huge undersupply of folks that work in IT. And yet we've got these brilliant IT minds from Asia that would come here, you know, from Southeast Asia that would come here. Why not bring them in? Let them work in IT.
Because they come in legally, they get stopped.
But they're not coming in either. So my point is I would have a macro federal legal system to get them in here, nowhere there. Now, in lieu of that, I think these very poor folks should work. And it's not a politically correct thing to do, but I think we should have, I don't know if it's a compound system, I don't know if it's a camp system, I don't know if it's a refugee camp type system. We need to have a place for these folks to go where they are learning English, they are learning basic skills, and they are shuttled in and out every day to come and work. And whether that's in slaughterhouses where nobody wants to work, in fields where nobody wants to work, and you're looking like I'm crazy, factories where nobody wants to work, let them go to work. They're here anyway. And if I was, and I've talked to Mayor Johnson about this, I've talked to Governor Polis about this.
What do they say?
They like what I'm saying in terms of the work part. I don't know about the camp part, but they like the work part. But they say they can't because they risk getting sued by the federal government. And worse, if Trump wins, they risk getting jailed. Because I guess Trump made a proclamation that any mayor and any governor who hires these guys, I'm going to come get you and put you in jail when I win. Now, what I would do is, I would say F you to the federal government, whether it's Biden or Trump, and I would get these guys going to work. I would come up with a proper system that I'm going to work. Let them sue me. And then if I'm a political leader with a higher ambition, which our governor and our mayor may have, I don't know.
You think maybe, perhaps?
What better press than being the guy that solved this problem for the state and the city? And I think they should do that.
Why won't they do it?
I think that threat of the lawsuit and the threat of jail is a real threat.
Both Polis and Johnson, they're smart guys.
Very smart guys.
But they will not stand up to the batshit crazy wing of their party. And that's the problem. The things that the governor puts his signature on that he knows better. I've known him. I've known him for 25, almost 30 years. He knows better. But he will not stand up to his left wing. Neither will Johnston. And I don't know how to get them to do so. It's not like they're going to listen to me. But at some point, their policies are killing the goose that laid the golden eggs. Colorado is going to become economically unviable in the next decade when these policies come to fruition.
So let me respectfully disagree just a little bit. I know them both very well. I consider them both personal friends. They've shown some independence from their party. So give you an example. Governor Polis, during the last session in 2023, he did veto a really stupid right of refusal bill that said if you're selling an apartment building, the municipality that your apartment building is in has the right to buy it, and it basically completely debilitates your ability
to. Good for him for doing that.
And
but that's one out of a million bad ideas.
And then Mayor Johnston, he vetoed that stupid cold bill about the you can't sweep if the temperature is a certain. So they've shown some independence from there. And both guys, not only are they smart guys, they are fundamentally moderate guys. I believe that anyway, okay?
Being moderate in your heart is different than being moderate with your pen.
I think they are fundamentally moderate guys, and I think we as a state—
I think they're fundamentally communistic when it comes to their official actions.
Well, now—
Over a beer, yes, I agree. Yeah, they are moderate guys.
Now, you know, you are what your record says you are, to quote Bill Parcells. It's one of my favorite quotes. And look, they are elected leaders. They are card-carrying members of a party that leans left, that I would say has become very anti-business. You know, I always thought of myself as the most progressive person in any room I walked into. I mean, that's what tracks. Yeah. 45 years of tracks. I would argue I'm quite progressive, thank you. And I think a lot of the policies of their party, maybe not them as individuals, but their parties are regressive. It's regressive. It's not progressive.
Why do you say it's regressive?
Because it's not progressive to overtax and overregulate every business in the state of Colorado and the city of Denver. That's not progress. That's regression. And we're seeing it. We're seeing less people moving here. We're seeing less people starting businesses here. We're seeing people leaving downtown Denver. That's regression. That's not progression. That's my two cents on that.
And it's because of what they're putting their signatures on.
I would argue it's what they're, so I guess they're putting their signatures on things that their party is coming up with. And again, I don't want to just be a whiner and a crier about it and a complainer about it.
I just got socked with
$200,000.
$200,000 increase in taxes.
$200,000.
That's $200,000 worth of reasons to complain about this stuff.
That's
$200,000 that your employees will not be receiving.
It's a huge problem. And we have tenants. Like, look, imagine being a tenant, a small tenant. We have a tenant that's a CrossFit gym. We have a tenant that's a cupcake shop. Imagine paying your rent every single month. Like clockwork, never had a late payment in 2023. You've recovered from COVID. You finally figured out this labor thing with minimum wage. You figured it out. You've paid rent every month on time for a whole year. And your landlord comes to you and says, thank you for paying rent like clockwork every day in 2023. Oh, by the way, you owe $47,600 for your share of the property tax increase from 2023. So it's doubly stupid. Not only does it go up by a rate that's untenable, but they charge you in the rears. It's not like the state sits around a table and says, okay, well, what are our budget needs this year? And let's go extract taxes accordingly. They're just given this largesse at the end of the year, and they don't even know what to do with it. It's a really stupid system. So
the wonderful thing is they don't even get property tax.
Right. Well, that's true, because it goes to the schools.
It goes to the locals.
Yeah, it goes to the locals. So, but back to the mayor and the governor, I do think they're fundamentally moderate guys. You are what your record
says
you are.
Given your Parcells quote.
You are what your record says you are. But I think that... look, they are a lot better than the alternative to their left. I will tell you that. They are a lot better. We could have had we could have had a comrade as our mayor, you know, other than Mike Johnston. I don't remember who was running to Polis's left, but it could be a lot worse. And you know, in the business,
don't make me feel better that our socialist governor could have been a communist woman. No,
I don't think he's a socialist, but we'll have to agree to disagree on that. In the business community, we look at Governor Polis like the goalie in a hockey game. You know, he's the one that's stopping the bad shots
and
from coming in.
How is he doing over his 6 years? You trade him for a different team.
I can't say about Jared. I mean, like I said, I'm a proud
because
Jared
I'm a friend. I'm a friend.
No, I am a friend.
We're friends. We're good friends. His policies are destroying us, and Trax will probably be out of business. We'll have to move in a few years. But he and Johnson, good friends. I can't. Come on, man. Let me do the ultimate Biden. Come on, man.
What I worry about is we as Trax, whether it's 45 years or you asked for the last 10 years, we've had a great run. What I worry about is where's the guy or the gal out there who's willing to take the risk with their capital to do the next Trax?
To what your father
and what
Marty
I'm worried
did.
About is we have in this state, in this city, and to some extent this country, we've really disincentivized people from taking risks to start new businesses. And that actually I worry about more than how my business is.
You've just hit on one of my magic themes. We have insulted the term risk. We have made risk synonymous with gamble. So people think that successful businessmen just gambled and they won. And not understanding what it takes to risk your capital, your time, your energy, your livelihood on a dream, on a business, that's risk. And Colorado was built on that risk.
We are the pioneers.
And now it is insulted.
My ancestors came to the state of Colorado in 1863, and he started a general store in Leadville, and he sold mining supplies to miners. So I come from a long line of entrepreneurs. And what you learn as an entrepreneur is, unless you're a scumbag, which I don't think I am, but we'll see what public opinion decides. Maybe after this show, we'll see. But you get paid last after your employees. You take on all the liability. An employee you maybe have never even met may make a mistake or do something stupid, and you get sued into oblivion. You're the one in the dock at the courthouse dealing with that issue, okay? If you have a loan, if you take on credit, debt, to run your business, and you sign for that loan, and you can't pay that loan off, you lose everything. And I'm not saying that a CEO should make 1,000 times what his or her executive assistant makes. I'm not okay with that. But there has to be a reward for taking risk. And I'm worried
it has to be worth it. Otherwise, yes. People don't do it, and right. People don't do it, we don't advance.
And there is no Trax. And there is no Wincoop Brewing Company when John Hickenlooper took a big risk in the 90s. By the way, John Hickenlooper opened the Wincoop right around the times of the old Trax was open. You know, John Hickenlooper back then was a risk taker. And you don't get those types of risk takers if you have a system that disincentivizes risk. And I'm very concerned about that. And I'm very concerned about that in the state of Colorado and the city of Denver.
Let's leave it right there. Okay. That's great. Except you are going to have like a libertarian conservative gay night. Because I know a lot of gay people who are closeted not because of their sexuality but because of their political views.
Oh yeah, no, I have a lot of friends in the gay community, the LGBTQ community, who are libertarians. You know, and by the way, what's happened with this? Maybe we should end on this, but with this far left skew that we've seen, this real anti-business kind of socialist.
Cancel culture.
Strain of the Democrat. Yeah, and cancel culture. A lot of my friends in the LGBTQ community are not okay with it. They may not be comfortable speaking up about it, but they're not okay with it.
I've known people who said, I'm willing to tell my employer I'm gay, but if I tell them I'm a gun owner, I'd lose my job.
Yeah, you know? I've heard that too.
Hey, thank you so much.
All right, cheers. To great to see you, John. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. It. Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Devil's Advocate, I hope you'll share it with a friend. And I hope you'll subscribe and follow the show. We have new ones released weekly. Remember, this audio was taken from our TV show. To watch it, just search the letters IITV for Independence Institute TV on YouTube for this and many other great conversations.